This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and today I'm joined by Natasha Williams. Natasha is a highly experienced CBT and EMDR trained psychotherapist who has over 20 years experience of working with women and their partners. She specializes in working with women who have experienced fertility issues and pregnancy loss. And she is a member of the At Parenthood in Mind team. She's here to talk to us about pregnancy after loss. So welcome, Natasha. It's really lovely to have you here.
Oh, hi, Hayley. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really important topic, as we were just saying off recording. And we've had a lot of response from our listeners with questions that they have for you. So I thought, why don't we kick it off with a first question and we'll go from there. So this one is from Jess. Thanks, Jess. So her question is, are there any recurrent features you see in TFMR pregnancy after loss women and couples, which we commonly struggle with? And what are some basic approaches for dealing with these features?
Yeah. Okay. Well, if we kind of put it into context, termination for medical reasons would be classed as a traumatic event. So we've got symptoms of trauma. And if we think about trauma, what we're talking about is this feeling of overwhelm, you know, that our system just can't cope with. It's come out of suddenly nowhere. We're not in control. It's not predicted. And we're having to deal with the response of any type of news. And so a typical emotion from that is anxiety and worrying about the now, the future, thinking about the past. And so a lot of people who will then come to me for support for a pregnancy after a termination for medical reasons, they're normally in a state of feeling either quite numb because they spent such a long time just trying to come to terms with their loss, or they're feeling very anxious and overwhelmed. We've got to start again, what's going to happen, and trying to almost think about how they're going to manage the future, knowing almost what the future may hold based on their previous experiences. So overwhelm is a typical symptom that people have, and that can show itself in just not being able to communicate with people, feeling a disconnect, you know, a huge level of anxiety during the day that's affecting their functioning. They're seeing the change in their relationships. They're seeing the change in how they're communicating and just functioning through the day, sleep, eating, withdrawing. And obviously the physical responses of that as well. So feeling really, really overwhelmed, you know, the heart pounding out of nowhere, the stomach churning, you know, the physical responses that's telling us that something bad's going to happen, or thinking that something bad's going to happen. So that's a typical kind of overview of what people normally present with. We also have typical responses in terms of how the couple start relating to each other and how the relationship changes, because both of them would have experienced a level of grief, and we'll term it as disenfranchised grief. So a grief that not everybody understands or can see, and everyone grieves in a different way. And for some people, this is their first episode of a significant passing of somebody close to them.
Yeah.
So they're not equipped to deal with this type of grief. And in the grief, we've got the numbness, the anger, all the different emotions that come with that. But we've got two people trying to survive something really difficult whilst grieving, and most likely both suffering from some type of trauma. And so what I often hear in sessions with patients is that they are just feeling a bit of disconnect between their partners. Mm-hmm. They're not feeling like they understand each other. There's a big change in their relationship compared to how it's been before. And like the first time that they're not able to communicate, or the very first time that they're arguing or not being able to communicate what they need because they don't know what they need. I have a lot of ladies saying that it feels like their husband doesn't understand because he's just gone to work as normal. You know, he's gone and done the DIY. He's gone into practical mode. And so for all they assume that means he doesn't care, when actually he most likely really does care. It's just that he's trying to find his way of coping. And there's a lot of research that talks about what happens in relationships when there is reproductive trauma. And this would be a trauma in that sense, and that almost like there's this thing of both couples can't grieve the same at the same time, because one has to support the other. So it's a bit like having somebody who's the wall and someone can lean on the wall. And so it tends to be, not all the time, but the male partner becomes practical mode and holds the female partner up, if we're talking about couples where there's male and female. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they then go into practical mode, fixing mode, very functional, where the lady who's suffered the loss will become more in touch with her emotions and doesn't know how to communicate that. But sometimes just wants to be held or hugged, or, you know, wants to slow things down, but doesn't know how to do that. So there's a bit of a disconnect. So almost a bit of the couple uncoupling slightly while they're going on their path of trying to figure things out. And then we have pregnancy.
Yeah.
And all that, which is supposed to then be joyous. It's supposed to be joyous, isn't it? That's what we're told.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we are in this place of grief and loss and wanting to think about the future, but being too scared to do that because we know what has happened previously and worry about if that happens again and how we will cope and how we will get through that period. So then we have a complex set of emotions there, the sadness, but also the rule that we should be happy. So lots of shoulds start coming in. So there's a lot of complexity in terms of what happens for individuals who are then experiencing pregnancy after a termination for medical reasons, but also as a couple in terms of how they navigate that going forward.
Yeah, I'm really, I'm quite struck by what you said about the couples decoupling. I think, you know, when we've spoken to other guests and we've talked to couples, or we've been doing a series lately on just talking to dads and their grief and their experience. So it really rings true. What you said. And then if we take this to another pregnancy, so I guess I'm really curious about how the pressure that the couple has been under and how well they have managed that pressure, how well they've looked after themselves individually, and how well that they've looked after the couple, the relationship, how that translates into another pregnancy after this loss. And I guess I'm just aware of how this is adding that there's much more than just the anxiety of the pregnancy after loss. There's more going on here.
Yeah, and this is what we talk about in terms of also different levels of grief, because your relationship has now changed.
Yeah.
You're grieving the relationship that you had before. You're meeting each other again as different people, but still as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
You are on a journey of having another baby and trying to, I suppose, being that moment, but reminded of what happened, as well as trying to work really hard at being a couple. Like, it's, there's so much work in this that nobody sees, and only the couple will experience and feel. And we also have different identities in our relationship. So the man might see himself as the one who always makes things okay. Or always makes things better. Yet he can't really do that as such in this situation. He can support his wife, but he can't fix it. He can't fix what has happened. And she might be maybe the nurturer or the planner or the optimistic one. And again, that changes because we have changed as people. So we're now working in trying to find a new normal for ourselves as individuals, but also as a couple. And what that needs to start off with is really communicating what is happening. So a lot of the time, as I said, this isn't like something that people experience all the time. It's not a regular thing that happens. We're not taught how to communicate with each other or check in with ourselves after a termination, after loss, because it happens to everybody. You know, it's a really unfortunate thing that happens. And so you have to start learning about what do I need or what do we need. And often people don't know that. I will ask people, what do you think you need in this moment in time? And they say, I don't know. Which is understandable because they don't know. It's a new thing completely. But then rephrase it in terms of what don't you need. And some of that will be, I don't need to be by myself at nighttime, or I don't need to be at a certain hospital, or I don't need to be reminded of things that are, you know, distressing. And trying to then communicate that with each other. And also, I think within that is trying to find time where you can both meet together in this type of communication. So whether it's having not date nights, but check-ins every day at dinner time, like, how are you doing? How's your day been? What's been a high? What are we thinking about tomorrow's appointment? What do we need to do? How are we going to get through it? So you're checking in with each other and learning a new way of communicating how you're feeling. So you can almost problem solve together what might be the best option for you going forward.
Yeah, so we've got a complex set of emotions, of behaviors. And I mean, the thing that you are really speaking to is this communication. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, you have to learn again.
Yes.
Or learn something new in your communication.
Yeah, because often I always say it's almost like you're speaking the same language, but a different accent.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't understand each other, but you know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Where if you can slow down and come back to really basic kind of conversation, how are you? No, really, how are you today?
Yeah.
You know, how have you been feeling? What's been happening for you today? You can start being able to just check in with yourself, because then you can communicate that with your partner in terms of how you are feeling. Now, again, some people just can't do that. Like, it's just not part of who they are. They're not comfortable with that. So I've had couples who will then do voice notes instead to each other, because then you can read it, listen to it when you want to listen to it without having to feel like you've got to say the right thing to comfort each other. Or they'll text each other. They might do it while they're going for their evening walk as part of a new ritual. Let's go for an evening walk. Let's get some mindfulness in. Let's take in the senses and let's talk whilst walking hand in hand and next to each other. So you're connecting with each other. And it's a bit more easy and fluid in that way. So there's lots of ways to do it, but you're right, it is a new way of communicating.
Yeah, and I can see then, you know, how this relates to then going into another pregnancy. Mm-hmm. How, if you can start building these communications with your partner and being able to slow down and tap into how am I really feeling?
Yeah.
When we're talking about overwhelm and anxiety, these are ways of beginning to start to manage what's going on for you.
Yeah, so it's almost like you're learning how you are responding to your overwhelm and anxiety. So you're getting an idea of who you are and how you are, which means that as you're going through the stages of the pregnancy and we're coming up to a specific deadline or we're going to a scan and stuff, you can use the tools that you've learned about yourself to check in. How am I? What's going on? So if she's having a bit of a go at me today, or he's been a bit snappy, I know why or what that's about. He's a bit anxious. And this is what we've agreed to do going forward if we are both anxious. So you're still communicating on this journey, you know, and as we know, pregnancy after loss, there's this sense of wanting to have some certainty, and we just don't get that. You know, I'll get to the 12-week scan, I'll get to the 16-week scan, you know, and there's this, if we just get to this point here, wanting to get to a place of safety, at this point we'll be safe. And even if we get to what we think was the place of safety, we still don't feel safe because we've got this huge emotion of overwhelm that's still happening in the background. So I would say, as you know, back to your question around themes, a lot of the themes are around this feeling of overwhelm and disconnect.
Yeah.
And if we can acknowledge that as we are feeling this, I am feeling this, but we're in it together, we are a team, but it might be that we need to have support separately or support together. So that might be couples counselling, that might be individual counselling or support. That might be thinking about how you're going to approach scans and appointments. Are you both going to go together? And if you do, what works better for you? What do you need in these appointments? And think about that before the appointment. So again, you're working together as a team to try and reconnect. We've also got things around trying to ground yourself as much as possible. So any kind of techniques that are going to help you be more grounded, whether that's easy exercise or yoga or any kind of mindfulness grounding techniques that you can do together. So I've always talked to couples about basically the ABC. So whilst they're sitting in the waiting room for scans, they go through the alphabet ABC of fruits and veg. So they're grounding themselves. They're not too caught up in their head and their worries, and they're able to connect in that moment in time. So almost checking in with each other at different stages through the pregnancy, but also on a daily basis.
I think the grounding is really important. Do you want to just explain a bit more about that? Because there may be listeners that kind of go, I've heard this, but I don't really understand what that means.
Yeah. So often when we have a feeling of overwhelm, we have this sense of having a window of tolerance. So we are normally in this window of tolerance where we can cope with a lot of stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Okay. But as we have significant life experiences, our window of tolerance gets smaller. So we're not able to tolerate as many things as we used to before. So the things that might be small, which we could cope with before, we might not be able to cope with. That might be like loud noises. That might be lots of busyness. That might be lots of emails. And so we have two responses. We either become hyper aroused. So we are overly anxious, irritable, angry, frustrated, or we become hypo aroused, where we become disconnected, quite numb, disassociated. So we can't kind of concentrate on things. So we try and look at ways that we can get you back in your window of tolerance, where you can be back in the moment as opposed to being in your head or being in your body and not being able to cope. Mm. So grounding techniques really come from, I suppose, this scheme of mindfulness, trying to be more in the moment, trying to be mindful of what you're doing. So we're not spending too much time in our thoughts or not spending too much time in our anxious feelings. And so I'll use grounding quite a lot with people that I'm working with just to help them manage this feeling of overwhelm. So that physical feeling of overwhelm when you are feeling overly anxious, when you can't breathe properly, when you can't catch your breath, when you can't sit still, just to soothe the central nervous system. So we're not as feeling out of control. We're feeling more soothed and connected with the here and now. Mm. And so that can be anything that's going to activate our senses. So it could be anything from drinking a nice ice cold glass of water, to having a lovely shower, to walking outside, and just trying to bring our attention to the here and now. So what does the ice taste like in our mouth? What do we smell when we're walking? What can we do that's going to help calm us down, be in the moment, and just be a bit more peaceful with ourselves? There's lots of different techniques that we can do to help soothe ourselves during the day, but also when there's really difficult times of stress, like, for example, you know, scans or appointments or telephone calls that you're expecting to have and things like that.
Yeah, because we've had a few sort of questions come in, you know, around this idea of, yes, but how do I not get overwhelmed and think that everything's going to go terribly wrong again? And I think what you're saying is that by using these grounding techniques, what you're doing is going, right now,
yes,
I am okay.
Yes.
Right now, I am safe and this baby is safe.
Yes. Yes. We're trying to be in the present as opposed to the future.
Yeah.
We have history about a possible future, but we don't know what the future holds. Okay, if we live in the future without any understanding of what that may be, it causes us extra anxiety that we don't necessarily need. We've already got enough anxiety going on with our experiences that have happened. So trying to bring yourself in the moment means that in this moment in time, I have some control of how I'm feeling and I can meet my needs in this moment in time, no matter how small or for what short duration, as opposed to living in this overwhelm and then feeling out of control. You know, it's not a physical feeling that is pleasant, is it? It's really unpleasant feeling to have all the time. So it's just about teaching our brains that in this moment in time, I can feel okay. I can have moments of small enjoyment. You know, I can enjoy that small bit of coffee, or I can enjoy that small bit of chocolate, or I can enjoy the walk and look at the beautiful leaves. Doesn't make everything else okay. Doesn't undo the past. But for this moment in time, I can just be a little bit more settled.
Yeah, I mean, there's research, you know, around how our brains work and the neurobiology around how, you know, we've evolved as a species to sort of look for danger, you know, and be alert, high alert to danger. That's how we've survived and got this far. And the thing is, we need to, I think what I'm hearing is sort of say, right, well, right now, come back to right now. So being able to kind of switch off the hypervigilance in that sense, or the hypo state of numb or hyper aroused, but be able to kind of go, right now I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And right now this is what I have. And savor that, I think, is maybe the other thing of kind of being able to kind of enjoy that particular moment. I'm wondering about how those little moments, how that helps as you go forward, if you see what I mean. So how does that sort of being able to kind of stay in those moments? Does that give you some kind of resilience? Does that give you some
you just made a really good point. Okay, so we are wired to be anxious. It keeps us alive. It keeps us safe. We have to have an element of anxiety, otherwise you just wouldn't survive or be here.
Yeah.
When we have a traumatic event, that's elevated. It's not your then normal anxiety or overwhelm. It's a traumatic response. And it doesn't just turn down just like that. You know, we have to process what's happened. We have to be able to talk about it and work through that. Unfortunately, when we are pregnant after a termination for medical reasons, we can't avoid the trigger of
Exactly.
Our body is part of that, isn't it? We can't separate the two from that. And we could be living in a state of constant overwhelm for the whole duration of the pregnancy, which is, again, isn't pleasant for anybody. So we have to be realistic in that, yes, I will be worried. I will be overwhelmed. Actually, some of my anxiety helps me. We know that there's neurological changes in terms of how we think about things when we become parents as well. So matrescence kind of period happens. So we are going to be even more anxious and on a high alert. We're wired to do that. But it's being realistic about it. We can't get rid of anxiety. It's not going to go. We have to be able to sit with it a bit more and accepting that, yes, I will feel anxious and I do feel anxious. But in this moment in time, I just want to tone it down a little bit. I just want to be able to sit still for a little bit. So it gives us a sense of having some control in a situation where we feel we have no control at all. And this is being realistic in terms of it won't be a quick fix. It won't turn off your anxiety all the time. But if we can train ourselves to just have some small moments of being in the moment, it becomes a bit easier to tap into when there's a huge overwhelm. When we've been triggered by something quite big, we can then go back to that technique we've used where we can say, okay, I'm going to take some deep breaths. I'm just going to take some time out. I'm going to try and reset myself and think about what's happening for me.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a tool.
Well, on the note of tools, there's a question from Fong San, who she's asking about what we're kind of talking about. She's going, how to reduce anxiety? How can I reduce anxiety with scans and blood tests? How to relax and not overthink and worry about everything? So she's talking about what we're discussing right now, but is there specific things that you use as tools with your clients?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. So in all of this, that's quite difficult. What I try and encourage people to do is trying to have some kind of basic routine that they can always engage into. That will help with some type of distraction. Distraction isn't always great, but in this situation, we need to be distracted at times. Okay, so having some kind of routine where you can have moments of mindfulness as well. So, you know, whether it's having a lovely shower in the morning with that smelling shower gel, that helps you connect with yourself and your body and maybe your baby. So we're kind of doing a couple of things here because people always talk about not wanting to feel like you connect with the baby.
Yeah.
And so we're doing some mindfulness as well as have some soft touch with our body that we can sometimes have a difficult relationship with now, given what's happened, having moments when we can go for walks. So one of the things that plays a big part in anxiety is the vagus nerve. It's this nerve from the back of our head right down to our central nervous system. And if we can tone that, if we can calm that down, it can reduce anxiety symptoms. So if we can do techniques that can help us, like touch, like drinking water, like singing, like walking, like some exercise, that can also calm us down. So I always think about a really basic starting point of what is your day looking like on a general basis. And you might not want to leave the house all the time, you might not want to speak to people, but if we can get you to do some really basic things, getting up, getting dressed, brushing your teeth, having something nice to drink if you can tolerate foods and drinks, depending on what's happening with your pregnancy, getting outside, so you're moving your feet, you know, you're just trying to get rid of some of the adrenaline that's happening, that's really useful. Also planning and thinking about plans in terms of how you're going to approach appointments, scans, consultations with your consultant. So again, planning that, sitting down with your partner, what do we want to have from this appointment, how are we going to cope, do we need to leave a bit earlier so we can get there, sit in the car and decompress? Have we got any specific questions that we might need to email before? Asking particular things that you might need at scan. So, you know, do you want to see the screen? Do you not want to see the screen? Is there something you want to put in your notes to say, this is my basic story, I don't want to keep repeating it, but if you look in my notes, here's my story of what's happened. So looking at ways that we can, again, feel a sense of control in the smallest areas possible.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I really like the fact that the thinking about, because I think a lot of people would be going, no, I don't want to think about scans. I don't want to think about blood tests. And of course you are thinking about them, right? So you can't, you're not getting away from this, but I can see how maybe go, no, I don't want to even think about it. And then suddenly you're in the maternity ward. And I mean,
and
doing it. You can have a full blown panic attack if you haven't sort of really giving yourself some love and time to sort of really think about actually what is it that I really need to feel supported here?
Yeah. And feeling safe.
Yeah.
A lot of women that I work with, when they come into therapy, they actually are at the hyperarousal stage. So they are numb. They're very, very numb. I don't know how they feel. You know, they're pregnant and don't know how they feel. And it's not until they get sometimes to that pivotal point they got to before.
Yeah.
And they then start feeling the sense of overwhelm then because they're being triggered by the day and the times and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And it's at that point they're like, I've got a scan tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how I'm going to cope.
Yeah.
Because they haven't, and I can get, it's absolutely understandable why you wouldn't want to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're living in, let's just get through today and get through today and get through today. Mm. But if there's a space for you and your partner to think, okay, we've got the scan tomorrow. I don't want to think about it, but what could we possibly need that would be helpful, whether it's just getting there a bit earlier or going with somebody else or planning what we're going to do after the scan. Should we go for a coffee? You know, it doesn't have big plans, but just trying to take some control in a situation where you have no control.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just even thinking of, it could be as simple as saying to the sonographer, look, you know, I know that you're doing a job and you have to some degree be quiet while you take your measurements, but this is what's happened to me in the past. And because I mean, so many people have talked about that silent bit and you're just kind of like, oh my God, you know, what are they about to say? I'm just thinking of myself, actually.
That's what I've had couples saying. That's what I've had couples doing. And sometimes if we think again about the trauma response, we get to a point where the amygdala, so it's our fear center, takes over and our logical thinking, talking part of our brain cannot get the words out.
Women
who get to appointments and they can't speak. They're in this state of arousal. But if they've all discussed it with their partner and said, listen, if we get there and I can't speak or I've gone quiet, can you please just tell them that I need them to keep talking, or can they just move the screen, or can they let me see, or can they position the bed a certain way? If you've had that conversation, it means that if you do go into this sense of survival mode at appointments, you've already had a bit of a plan on how you'll cope, as opposed to getting home and going, oh, I wish I'd done this, or I'm feeling even more overwhelmed because I've been triggered by something that reminded me of something before. It's just about trying to see where we can have a sense of control where possible. And it's not always going to be the case. And as you said, lots of people will not want to think about scans and blood tests or even next week. They're just trying to get through the day.
Yeah.
So understandable.
Yeah, it is really understandable. And so if anybody's listening and kind of going, I just find that really difficult for me to even contemplate. It's very understandable. And and I think the message would be, Natasha, is to try to find something, even if it is maybe slightly off, say the scan target, maybe it's something slightly off that you feel like is a bit more available.
Yeah, tangible, realistic. Yeah. I always think about what's going to be realistic for you, okay? Yeah. We don't talk about the reality of what you can achieve within the resources that you've got. It's not going to work for you. You know, so it's always about, I know Julianne's mentioned this before, in terms of just trying to be slow and slow down and just take it a step at a time. And that is so true. And it's so hard to do. I get it.
Yeah.
Women I'm working with are in this constant fear of what will happen next and trying to think about the future. And the hardest thing is saying to them, let's just think about like now, just for now, not just for today, but just for now. What do you need to just be a bit more slow so we can just reset the nervous system so you're not in constant sense of arousal?
So I'm just thinking of myself here, knowing my own kind of response to sort of trauma and what my sort of coping mechanism, my coping strategy was after Luna died. And my coping strategy is to speed up, not slow down.
Yeah.
So for me, now I've done a lot of work on this, but and I know it's the thing that needs to happen to be able to facilitate healing.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
But for me to make that leap,
Yes.
It felt like a leap of faith in a way, because I just was like, if I slow down, I'm going to feel all this. I'm going to feel.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel, and yeah. I don't want to feel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that was something I've had to work on.
Yeah. And there's a lot of women that I work with who are used to being busy. They're used to doing and fixing and not slowing down. They don't know how to relax almost because they're used to doing something. And so again, we're very realistic when we're talking about slowing down. I won't go from, I want you just to stop for an hour or two. I'm talking about minutes.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to start at a really low level and try and build upon that. And that might be something like, have a 3-minute shower instead of a 1-minute shower.
Mm.
You know, sit down and just drink your tea. Just sit down just for a couple of seconds and then get up. Like, we're trying to reset something, but we have to be realistic with it, because you are in this constant state of arousal and you will always be triggered by different things.
Yeah.
So the reality is, a lot of people would not be able to just stop and slow down. And that's actually really scary. If I stop and slow down, I've got to think, I've got to feel, I've got to process. And I can't do that. I've got to get through this pregnancy. I've got to get through this day.
Yeah. And I mean, it's almost like I'm running away. I mean, that's how I sort of, I make a joke with my husband. I'm like, I'm running away. I'm emotionally running away.
Yeah.
Just gone, like Roadrunner, you know, through the wall. But yeah, it's been a real process of learning how to, and you say, as you like what you say, it was a real kind of bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
And again, this is still a process that I'm learning, because this is obviously very deep for me. This is deep to how I am as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's it takes a lot of mindfulness around it, and being aware of, hang on a minute, just kind of going, I'm really speeding up.
Yeah.
Just starting to kind of notice these things, and then being able to go, okay, I'm going to take 3 deep breaths and just put my hands on the kitchen counter.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be big things. We're only talking about small things. We've got to be realistic, because you are still pregnant and you're still going through the pregnancy, and you are still going to have things that are going to trigger you, whether it's sights, smells, words, things, conversations.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to just disappear, but if you can have a sense of feeling some control, it's going to help.
Definitely. And I can attest to that it was a scary thing to think about to begin with, and it took a long time to kind of convince myself that this was a good thing to do. But it, once I started to try it, I definitely sort of swear by that is a better way for me to be in the world, rather than just running away all the time and being busy all the time.
And sometimes slowing down hasn't going to be, again, the examples that I've given, it can be just writing how you're feeling.
Yeah.
So now your thoughts then. It's getting rid of it and put it on a piece of paper that you can put away until you want to do it again. So journaling and writing how you're feeling is also a really good way to just help you. You've got to use a pen, or you've got to text, and you've got to slow down to get the words out. So that's slowing down slightly. You're able to put things out somewhere else. So there's other ways you can do it. But I can say that a lot of people that I work with, it's the biggest thing, slowing down. It means so much, isn't it?
Yes, it does. So let's go to another question. So one from Jordan. There's been a few people who've kind of touched on this, but Jordan has asked, you know, how to cope with guilt. So how to cope with the guilt of being pregnant again after the termination. Somebody else sort of said, you know, so her question was around how to enjoy pregnancy after loss, but it's touching on the guilt here. It feels as if this baby is more loved and wanted than the other, which of course isn't true, she says, but the feeling of guilt is here. And that was from Rasa. So both Jordan and Rasa have asked a question around how to deal with the guilt in pregnancy after loss.
The guilt is a typical normal response. Okay. So everybody will experience that. And it's a normal response, because this wasn't how it was supposed to be. Nobody ever thought about their story of having children was going to end like this. And it's even more layered, because this involves a decision having to be made, and a decision that is not taken lightly. And I think one of the things that is important to try and remember is why the decision was made. You know, that nobody would have sat and just went, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And there would have been lots of information to take on board. There would have been lots of thinking, lots of discussions. There were huge reasons why. And so it's important to try and remember that. I don't know if that would be reminding yourselves of why you made the decision, writing it down, thinking about, you know, what you all need at this moment in time.
Mm.
Guilt is a natural reaction, and it almost reminds us that we are humans who feel things that we love and we lost and that kind of thing.
Mm.
Doesn't mean that necessarily that it defines us
mm.
as a person. Whatever decision had to be made doesn't mean that it defines us as an individual.
Mm.
It's a decision for that moment in time. So compassion is really important here. And when I talk about compassion, everyone's like, oh, what does that mean? Like, just to be kind to myself. Like, how can I be kind to myself? And I completely get that, you know.
Yeah.
But it's how we phrase it, how we talk to ourselves.
Mm.
And often just that phrase of give yourself a break is really powerful. Like, you are a good human being who does things and makes good decisions.
Well, quite often what's maybe useful and how I phrase it to myself, because again, being somebody who's very speedy and yeah. I've found self-compassion a bit like, what, huh? I
yeah.
don't understand. But the way that I phrase it to myself is like, what would I say to my best friend?
Yes.
If she said to me, I'm feeling incredibly guilty about being pregnant again and after this, and I feel like it means I'm forgetting my baby who died, because I think that's maybe what's at the back of this, at the, you know, underneath this guilt, like some I'm replacing.
Yeah.
How would I respond? What would I say to her?
Yes.
You know, and would I say, oh, well, you've got a good reason to be guilty, you know, absolutely. Blah, blah, blah. No, I wouldn't start sort of harassing, you know, that's not how I would do this, you know. So why would I do that to myself?
Yeah.
Why would I start harassing myself?
Yeah, how useful is it? And there's a purpose as to why we have this experience of guilt.
Yeah.
But there's other ways we can think about our children.
Yes.
Like feeling guilty. You yeah. know, we can be a bit more kinder to ourselves. You wouldn't tell your partner off for feeling guilty, would you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't tell your best friend or your family off. It's a human response to a really difficult situation.
Yeah.
And that feeling of compassion, you know, it's hard to try and be compassionate to yourself
mm.
when you are in this experience, because it's an experience that is so difficult. But just like you said, asking yourself, okay, I'm feeling guilty. I know why I'm feeling guilty. Having that check-in. I know why I'm feeling guilty. But I'm a good person. I make good decisions. I made this decision for a reason.
Mm.
No, it's about trying to have that nice, soothing self-talk. And, you know, I'm a therapist. I can say that quite easily. Doing mm. it is a lot harder to do.
Exactly.
But it's just trying to train ourselves that actually, if we're kinder to ourselves, we will feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're not somehow, I don't know, I wanted to sort of say, like, you know, this kind of thing of like letting yourself off the hook or something. It's like, as you say, you made a decision in the time with the information that you had. It wasn't made lightly. And I think my hunch is that this is kind of linked to how do I still honor the baby that's gone before, that's died?
Mm.
What mm. place do they have in my family?
Mm.
So I'm wondering about kind of how, if you're feeling guilty about this new pregnancy, I don't know what that maybe is telling you about what you need to sort of honor the baby who went before, to
yeah,
know
yeah.
that their place is there in your family. You know, they're not forgotten.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a difficulty because you are living in grief with a thought. We've got two emotions.
Mm.
We've got sadness and slight happiness. We've
yes.
got
yeah.
loss and hope.
Yeah.
I think you can't have the two.
Yes. You've got to be one or the other.
And you can have the both.
Yeah.
You can feel sadness and happiness.
Yeah.
You can feel loss, but you can also feel hopeful.
Yeah.
You know, and there's space for everybody in your family. And to think about your future child does not mean that you're going to forget about your other child. You are mm. still a parent to that child. And mm. I think some of that is talking about rituals and how we think about the children who have gone. You know, have a lot of people who will say, I want to talk about my child, but my family think it's a bit weird.
Mm.
Really, it doesn't matter what your family think, because mm. it's your child. And if you can honour that by photos or memorabilia or talking
mm-hmm.
about your child, then they're still part of your family. You can still look forward to the future. And that's not replacing your child. It's just another addition.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I really like that. It's another addition to your family. I mean, yeah, somebody sort of asked the question, you know, how to kind of cope with other people thinking that you're replacing. And I think that what you just said there is that you're not replacing, it's another addition. This is another addition to our family.
Mm.
The baby that died, for a lot of us, you know, we still feel that we are a mother and a father, a parent to them. So
absolutely.
It's hard for people on the outside to see that if they haven't been through something similar.
Yeah.
It's hard to get your head around. I mean, admittedly, how would I have known that that was kind of a thing or possible? I wouldn't know that until I've been through it. So, but yeah, you know, it's sort of being able to honor that you are still a parent to that child and you're finding a way. I think the other complicated bit here is you're finding a way to kind of parent that child that's died.
Mm-hmm.
While being pregnant with a new one. So you're in this, and you may have a child or two or whatever beforehand as well. So you're sort of doing a lot of parenting in different guises.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Whilst trying to look after yourself.
Whilst trying to look after yourself, husband, go through the grieving.
Job, yeah. Grieving. You know,
it's a lot.
Human being. And this is what I say to everyone. You are a human being, not a robot. So be gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
It's going to feel tough at times. You're going to have these emotions, and that's okay. It's okay to feel guilt and sadness, anger, irritability. That's not the issue. It's what we then do with it. You know, acknowledging that actually I do feel really crappy today, or I feel really guilty. That's okay to feel that, because you're a human being. It doesn't define you as a person, though. You have strength in so many ways. And it's just reminding yourself of that. I think also you mentioned about family maybe not knowing or understanding. I think this is where it's really good to kind of direct them to resources. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you just don't want to have the conversation unless it's with people who really get it. Having to discuss it in detail and trying to get their viewpoint can be just as triggering and as difficult. If you can refer them to resources, whether it's ARC or Thomas or any other appropriate resource, then you can almost send them an email. This is what's really good to have a look at, or something like that. So it kind of lessens the work
you
have to do around that. You're already working hard to just keep going, aren't you?
Yeah. There's something here I think I want to ask you around. You know, there's been some questions around like perinatal health and sort of availability of that. And I guess, you know, we're talking about trauma and we're talking about grief, you know, the complicated parts that happen when you get pregnant again and you're going through same triggers. And it's the sort of like what's available for women and couples. You know, I guess I'm thinking about when it's actually more than anxiety. I was going to say just anxiety. That's not, I don't mean just anxiety. I mean, it's more than that. What are the signs to look out for?
Okay. Well, I will always define anything that needs extra support is if it's having an impact on your functioning.
Okay.
We can always have levels of anxiety or low mood or feeling quite distressed or sad. But if actually it's impacting how we function for the day, so we're not sleeping, we're not eating, we're not communicating, we're not getting dressed, we're not leaving the house, we're not able to work, we're not able to concentrate, we're feeling quite numb from our feelings and our partners, we're avoiding. So typical symptoms of trauma are areas of avoidance, intrusions, and hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. And so avoidance is avoiding conversations, avoiding people, avoiding places, like really closing ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
Intrusions tend to be lots of flashbacks, reliving, kind of intrusive thoughts that we just don't have any control over.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmares, lots of dreams about difficult things that, again, that are not settling down. And the hyperarousal is that feeling quite jumpy or on edge or feeling quite numbed out. They're like the key things. So we can all have them maybe in low levels, but if we're noticing actually, I haven't texted anybody for months or I haven't left the house in days and I don't brush my teeth or comb my hair anymore, or, you know, me and my partner are just arguing all the time, or I'm going to work and I'm just sitting for hours and not getting anything done. Mm. It's a regular thing. And it's feeling overwhelming at times, or, you know, I'm sitting there and out of nowhere, I just can't breathe and I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
And they're typical signs that we need to have extra support. Now, there are there's lots of self-help things that you can Google and put on the internet. But the difficulty is Google is a minefield, and it's great, but also not great in lots of different ways. And I suppose the starting point would be to speak to your GP.
Mm-hmm.
The GP can assess what kind of support you might need. And they might recommend that you go through your local NHS talking therapy services.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm honest, there's a lot of waiting lists around. Or it might be looking at private practice. So typically Parenthood in Mind, looking on the Tommy's website, that will kind of direct you to different agencies and companies. There's actually a company, I think, called Pregnancy After Loss that has got some really good resources there as well. But it's really thinking about how I'm feeling now, really checking in, is this okay? Like, is this sustainable? Is it going to get any worse or better? I use an integrative approach to therapy, but my two main things are CBT, cognitive behavioral psychotherapy, and EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which is why we say EMDR, it's a bit easier. And both of them are very evidence-based at working with trauma and grief and helping you process what's been happening for you. And so there are also options to kind of do, again, whilst you're pregnant, and trying to work on the now and dealing with the now, and also thinking about the future, and at times processing the past. And your experienced therapist or psychologist or whoever you see will do a really good assessment to look at, okay, what are we going to work on now? What do we collaboratively think is going to be useful to work on in the here and now?
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Natasha. We've covered a lot. And at the end of all of our episodes, we do this thing called TFMR takeaways. So I've got a little question for you. What is the one thing a woman can do to ease her stress and anxiety and pregnancy after loss? Now, I think we've kind of touched on those things, but of all of those things that we've talked about, what would you say is the, if you were going to do one thing?
One thing, I'm going to cheat a bit and use communication, because that covers a lot of things. Communication. And under that umbrella, we've got communicate with those close to you. Communicate with your partner, communicate with your GP, communicate with a possible therapist or counsellor.
Yeah.
But talking about how you're feeling will help you understand what is happening for you and what you need.
Yeah. And I'm taking from that as well, like, you know, don't suffer this alone. You do not have to do that. And you definitely don't deserve that. So don't use that as a stick to beat yourself with. You definitely deserve to have support and to feel relief as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there was some, you know, finding your village. And I always find that a really weird concept to use, because some people are introverts and they're not going to find people who have had the same experience, and their friends and family just don't get it. But that can be one person.
Yeah.
Who just understands. It might be somebody who you don't think would be, like your neighbour. You know, your GP, somebody might be able to just get it,
yeah,
and listen. But you've got to be able to trust that you can share that, and it's going to be safe for you to share that with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Natasha. It's been a really good chat, and I think people are going to really appreciate you coming and speaking and sharing so many insights and information and techniques and whatnot. So, yeah, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a lovely pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. If you liked this episode, have a listen to Natasha's colleague and the founder of At Parenthood in Mind, psychotherapist Julianne Boutileb, talking about trying to conceive in episode 44, or episode 38, where I discussed genetic counseling with Dagmar Tapon and ARC's Jane Fisher. You can also rate and review us on Apple, and you can subscribe, which means you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released, and you can find us on most podcasting platforms. Get in touch. We love hearing from you. Find us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR. That's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves.